Greetings. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, host of this program.
We are speaking with Lawrence Edwards, our guest for today, and this is Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network. Lawrence Edwards, PhD, trained as a monk in India and has been teaching meditation for over 40 years. He is a renowned expert on Kundalini, a licensed psychotherapist, and a medical school faculty member. He is the author of Awakening Kundalini, The Path to Radical Freedom. And you can find out more at his website, thesoulsjourney.com. I'm really very happy to be speaking with you, Lawrence, but I would love to learn a little bit more about you. And it seems that you have a very long and diverse career in meditation and really taking that inner spiritual journey. And you are the founder of Optimal Mind Training, which helps people to really understand themselves, I presume, as well as how to get out of their own way, to me is what it seems. I hope you could explain it a little bit more succinctly. But tell us a little bit about your journey. I know that you studied with several monks and have traveled a great deal building this practice.
Sure. Well, I had kind of a somewhat of an unusual beginning. My experiences of things being radically different than, the world kind of presents itself as began when I was a little child, like 3.5 years old. And it was later on that I realized it was sort of my first encounter with what I learned later to be an image, an experience of what in the Eastern traditions is called Kundalini. And Kundalini is a yogic term, and it refers to really the power of revelation and transformation, the power of grace, a name that's given to really the infinite power of the universe to create all that is. And in the Eastern traditions, that power is viewed as the great goddess, an aspect of the divine feminine. And when I was very little, I had this experience of waking up literally in my crib in a thunderstorm and seeing a figure, a feminine figure made of light standing over my crib. And that image and that experience stuck with me. And it had a profound impact on me. Even my parents remembered me and my brother and sister talking about the Lady of Light that I saw when I was so little.
Wow.
And many years later, I got finished up high school and began college, I started practicing yoga and meditation and had a recurrence of that same experience of that same form showing up and being able to see and experience that much more consciously and seeing what that power of grace and transcendence is. And it was really through then meditative practices, yoga practices, and this innate power that, in the Eastern traditions of yoga is called Kundalini, allowed me to access that and see that this is something everybody has. I mean, that's what the yoga traditions make very clear, that this innate power is something that we all have. It's our birthright to come to know this and to be able to, with that power of consciousness, see beyond the ordinary mind. The practices mm-hmm. of meditation, the practices of yoga, even practices like that you're so involved with Qigong, are for balancing and healing the body and for going beyond the ordinary mind. And that there's a domain of experience and consciousness beyond the ordinary ego mind that opens us up to these experiences of union with the infinite, with the divine. So that when yogis and sages and saints and Taoists talk about the way, this is the way. It's the way that this energy unfolds and can take us beyond what just the ordinary mind can do. The mind can do a lot in terms of practices. I teach, you know, meditative practices. I do biofeedback with people. My practice is as the Optimal Mind incorporates neurofeedback and biofeedback and therapies. But there are limits to what the mind can do. And that's why the sadhana practices of yoga, meditation, that inform so many great spiritual traditions, were really aimed at going beyond, you know, just patching up the mind and getting it optimally functioning. It was to say, oh, but who and what are we? What is this universe? And what is this transcendent consciousness that we can have access to?
And tell me a little bit about your study of Tibetan Buddhism.
Well, that started back when I was in college, so back in the 70s. And I had the good fortune to meet Choyam Trungpa Rinpoche and studied with him for some time. And it really opened up my interest into kind of the deeper levels of meditation. And simultaneously, I'd begun also studying Jungian psychotherapy and being trained in archetypal psychology and seeing the overlap that that as you know Jung's work and on archetypes and symbols really serves as a bridge for understanding the unique language of symbols that both Tibetan Buddhism and especially the imagery and the symbols around Kundalini of chakras and images that come out of meditative visions opens up. And so, you know, I continued with my studies with both Tibetan Buddhism and then got very much involved in yoga practices with Swami Muktananda back in the 1970s and into the 80s. And it was through working with him and learning from him and going to India and training to become a monk, a sannyasin, a swami, and really delving deeply into those practices and seeing the extraordinary layers of consciousness that these can open up for an individual and how life-transforming they are. That actually then led me to do my doctoral research at Temple University on Kundalini and on the transformative power of practices related to that.
And for those of our listeners who haven't really experienced anything like this, can you describe what the experience is like when one is opening their Kundalini?
Well, Kundalini stirrings, Kundalini awakening can create many different experiences. There's a wide variety, everything from gentle movements and swaying in meditation. The different ways that Kundalini movement and activity manifest, they're called, in Sanskrit, it's a word called kriyas. It really just means movement of this shakti, of this power of consciousness of Kundalini. And there can be physical changes, so there can be swaying, there can be movement. There can even be spontaneous movement into hatha yoga postures. People can experience surges of energy moving through their body. Sometimes feelings of energy moving up and down through their spine, shifts in consciousness so that they enter these more expansive states of awareness that are suffused with sublime experiences of love and ecstasy and an embrace of all of everything, of seeing the divine present in everything. So all these different changes, from very mundane, simple ones to profoundly transformative spiritual experiences, can all unfold through the action of Kundalini.
And when one begins to work on this process of awakening their Kundalini, is it something that can happen quickly and or sometimes happen over time? What kind of commitment do people need to really do this for themselves?
Well, for themselves, 100%. Kundalini varies in how quickly people begin to experience the movement of Kundalini or the stirrings of that and how that can manifest. Some people have very dramatic, quick experiences, and then takes, you know, long time, can take years, how they stabilize that and that expands and how that opens. So in the yogic tradition, Kundalini awakening was really seen as a change point in the evolution of the soul across many lifetimes. So in the yogic perspective, their perspective, it literally is lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes long. And that it's the evolution of consciousness of the soul's journey across lifetimes that even brings them to the point where they would even be interested in Kundalini awakening. And then have the resources to be able to pursue that and dedicate, you know, time and attention to that. So that's why for you know, centuries, Kundalini was the most esoteric of the traditions, because it wasn't something that was meant to be, oh, this is just, you know, you dabble in this. This was something that said, oh, this is something that supports a seeker when they are just really feeling that deep longing to know the divine, to know who they are beyond the ordinary mind. The answer to that question, who are we, in the most profound sense, comes with this awakening, of this opening. Because Kundalini is the consciousness of the infinite to know itself. You know, there's an old saying in the yoga tradition, Kundalini is called the face of Shiva. Shiva means the auspicious one, the infinite divine. And just as you know somebody by their face, you come to know the infinite, the divine, as your own self through the power of Kundalini. And so it wasn't seen as something that, you know, that was just done a little bit on the side. It was seen that this is something that evolves and then opens, and a person is called to it when they have that deep longing. It's in the yogic term, mumukshutva, this deep longing to know the divine, to know the infinite, to go beyond the ordinary mind. And so it's very different to be engaged in that than other forms of meditation. I teach mindfulness. I've written articles on that. I teach, you know, in medical school and professional settings, mindfulness, meditation for stress management and stress reduction. These are all wonderful and beneficial practices, but they operate on a different level than the intent behind Kundalini awakening.
Yeah, I could see that, because many of the meditation techniques do help people to move deeper into themselves and release a lot of the stress-related thoughts and events that are happening in their lives, and it's very, very beneficial.
Sure.
But not everyone has that desire to go to that deepest space, or may not be conscious of that desire. But I have noticed in our current age that many people are ready, and it may be that we're living during a time when there are many old souls who are born into the planet, and everyone is really seeking that deepest space in order to maybe resolve what's happening in their own lives, but also to contribute to its resolving what's happening in the world. How do you see that so many people in this current age are interested in these things, where before it might have been very rare?
Well, I think there are a number of things. One is that we're also at a time where a lot of the suffering that was just brought about by not having one's health, or, you know, we see that there's levels, you know, right now the huge debate on healthcare is going to create a lot of suffering for people. But for a lot of people, where their basic needs have been taken care of, for health, for, you know, warmth, food, you know, all those basic needs, the material needs, once they start to be taken care of, you know, as Maslow, the great humanistic psychologist, and the hierarchy of needs talked about, you know, several decades ago, then our attention starts to move to other levels of what do we need and what do we want. And so there's many people who have, you know, basically all their basic needs taken care of, and they're still discovering that, oh, there's still a longing. There's still a searching. There's still something that says, oh, it's not just about having more of this or consuming more of that or owning another thing, that there's a depth that they're being called to that goes beyond just material possessions and material comfort and material ease. But we first have to have a certain level of that taken care of before we can look beyond that. But that then allows people to go, wait a minute, what is going on? And, you know, I've worked with people who are, you know, hedge fund principals and managers and have all their material needs taken care of and could for the next 10 lives for what they have. And they have that longing. They're going, wait a minute, okay. You get to the top of this mountain, you think that's going to be, you know, nirvana or heaven, and it's not. You've just accumulated a lot of things. And so we have to look beyond that. And I think there's a lot of people who are doing that. And you know, the Eastern traditions, Buddhist as well as yogic, looked at a level of suffering that helped to drive our awareness and drive our seeking to find, well, what's the real answer to suffering? And it's not in just possessing more or having more. And that begins to open up for people, and they start to say, oh, what is that? Where is that? Where do I find that ease, that profound peace, that rest, that connectedness that comes from some other source than possessions?
Well, yeah, I could see that very much. And also I think that people are, because not everyone is a hedge fund manager, and there are a lot of people who are just struggling day to day in the world. And I believe that these practices are very, very important for people who, you know, still have the day-to-day struggle. And I'm wondering, since you are a psychologist and you've worked with people in all these different ways, can you speak to people who, I see a lot of confusion and depression in the world where people are don't have their emotions under control and their relationships are under stress and just survival issues put them under stress. Can you speak to how these practices can help people who are struggling daily if they were to carve out the focus and the time to do what you're teaching?
Well, it has profound benefits, and I've seen this in working with people from every walk of life, including for years I did as a volunteer. I went into prisons, federal penitentiaries and state prisons, teaching meditative practices to inmates, and saw profound transformations that they went through, learning some very simple practices that would help to calm their mind and ease their body. And, you know, what we know neurophysiologically is that the stress response that is provoked by so many things in our lives, we seem to have a million different stress response buttons and ways that we're, you know, genuinely even threatened by what's going on in the world. But what it does is it provokes the nervous system in a way that now we know from studies on the brain literally takes the higher functioning areas of the brain offline. So when we're stressed, it causes an effect called cortical inhibition. The cortex is that outer covering of the brain, and it's where a lot of our higher capacities for thought, for planning, for problem solving occur. When we're stressed, when we're provoked, and whether that stress response shows up as fear or anxiety or anger or irritability, it's literally having the effect on the brain that then that very resources that we need to better cope and be more effective are harder to access. Interestingly, meditative practices, yoga practices, qigong practices, all have the benefit of calming that response in our nervous system and giving us a sense of being able to self-regulate, self-control. And that's part of what then brings about both greater health in the body, because the stress response in the body exacerbates all kinds of medical disorders, diseases, diminishes the immune system, etc. So calming the stress response, both in terms of it building the foundation for physical health, as well as shifting what's going on in our brain so that the neural circuits that we need of our highest capacities, our best intelligence, can come back online. These are all facilitated by very straightforward, easy to incorporate meditative exercises like mindfulness, like breath meditation. On the Anamkara Meditation Foundation, that's a nonprofit organization that I started right after 9/11 to be helping people through meditative practices through those darkest times, and we've continued since then. But on the Anamkara Meditation Foundation website, we have some free downloadable MP3 guided meditations for being able to de-stress and refocus and center the body in a better place of calm to build both health as well as resilience and better focus and attention in the mind.
And what is the website for that foundation?
Anamkara, A-N-A-M-C-A-R-A, foundation.org. Anamkara is an ancient Gaelic term. It means friend of the soul.
That's a beautiful thought. And also people can go to your regular website, thesoulsjourney.com. I noticed that there's a link there to Anamkara as well as other kinds of information. So you have a lot of resources online for people. And I want to remind everyone, Awakening Kundalini, The Path to Radical Freedom with Lawrence Edwards, our guest today. And I want to talk more about this, but I do have another question. And one of them is, how do you feel that these practices help to connect people into their intuition and into even a deeper knowing than one can, you were saying, than one can achieve with the mind? But I'd really like to bring that forward for people to understand the possibilities.
Sure. Well, what happens with meditative practices is, you know, so much of our attention automatically goes to what we're familiar with as the mind. It's this chatterbox. It's this inner, you know, constantly discursive background chatter. And the mind is continually sort of asserting itself and dominating our experience. And we don't even necessarily think of ourselves as separate from the mind. But the Eastern traditions say, you know, invite us to discover that, you know, you have a mind, but you're not your mind. You have a body, but you're not your body. So what are you? Who are you? What's the nature of the consciousness that witnesses and watches and experiences the mind? What's the nature of consciousness that watches and is awake while you're dreaming? What's the nature of consciousness that comes to know that you're in deep sleep, which is the continuous awareness of nothingness, but there's something that still had a thread of consciousness there? So the meditative perspectives and disciplines invite us to know that there's a much wider domain of consciousness than just what is highlighted by sort of the spotlight of our attention going after this thought, this feeling, this sensation, this memory from the past, this concern about the future. All of that content tends to be the only thing that dominates our awareness until we finally at night fall asleep exhausted and hope that it shut off long enough for us to go to sleep. So the meditative traditions say, yeah, but you know, if you begin to calm that mind and begin to discover that what's the domains, what's the spaciousness of awareness within which thoughts arise and subside, within which memories come and go, within which all these experiences happen, but there's a much wider field of conscious awareness that we can begin to know. And that also gives us access to knowing in ways other than the ways that the mind ordinarily knows, through senses, through thought, through feeling, that there are these intuitive capacities and even things that would go, I think, beyond intuition, experiences of expanded states of consciousness that are beyond even intuition, but that these are part of what each and every one of us is capable of, but we're never taught to access them. They may not be valued by society in general, so they're not spoken about, they're not promoted, but people find their way to them, and they have experiences of sort of going into them spontaneously from time to time. And I hear about that from people all the time, that, you know, whether it was through a dream or through a state of reverie, this whole other intuitive aspect opened up, and they saw things and understood things that their ordinary mind couldn't have gotten a hold of.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think a lot of people consider that space to be where a lot of creativity comes from. Mm-hmm. So when people are composing music or writing a novel or many of the things that we do, or even running a business,
sure,
that a lot of that comes out of that deep intuitive space that doesn't really reckon with the thinking process. It just comes fully blossomed into us as inspiration. So I do think that that's really an important aspect of what we're sharing here.
And meditative practices support people being able to access that. I mean, I've worked with musicians, potters, performance artists, painters, who have all used and then benefited by deepening their experience of meditation, because it clears the mind to get it out of the way for that direct creativity to express itself through whatever means that they have the talent and skill for.
Mm-hmm. And I think that while a lot of people are longing for that deeper connection to the spirit, or however one might think of it, the soul, the you also speak of it as the bodhicitta and shakti, but this whole energy of the divine self, I think that there are a lot of people who have these blocks based on fear and lack of self-confidence. Can you speak to how these processes might help people who are just blocked by habits, I suppose, of fear and lack of confidence that they might have developed in childhood or maybe even carried from a past life?
Right, right. Well, the practices, they operate on a few different levels. So on one level, yoga practices, meditation, are what are called deconditioning processes. So just as some of those things that you're talking about, like habits and just... these are conditioned responses. So the mind is seen as, it's a conditioned mind. We're conditioned to respond, to think, to perceive in certain ways. And that conditioning that's been a part of our upbringing, ways that we were treated by everything from family to coaches to teachers, et cetera, conditions the mind to have a kind of perspective on the world and itself. The meditative and yogic practices are deconditioning processes, and so they've been researched and written about, and how that they begin to decondition the reactivity of the mind. They decondition those patterns, because part of what's happening in meditative practices, as well as movement practices like yoga or qigong, we're breaking the pattern of the conditioned response by stepping back from it. And now, instead of going with it again, for instance, in meditation, we may just simply be coming back to how the body can respond by relaxing, by letting go, by breathing in certain very specific patterns that can really help invoke what's called the relaxation response. And a lot of research has been done on this, that just as we have this stress response, that's the fight, flight, or freeze response that's conditioned in so many ways and comes out through those fear patterns. Well, we also have built in, there's an innate response called the relaxation response. The Harvard cardiologist Herb Benson back in the 70s wrote about this and some of the early research on meditation. And the relaxation response is a way of overcoming that stress response and really calming the nervous system. Well, by learning how to reliably and repeatedly invoke the relaxation response instead of the stress and fear response, we begin to literally decondition though that kind of reactivity to people, to places, to thoughts, to all kinds of patterns, we gain the access to be able to shift out of those and create new ones that are going to be more reflective of the expansiveness that we're capable of. And so there's
Beautiful.
A profound level of that deconditioning that goes on with these practices.
That's wonderful. We're going to take a minute or two to take a station break.
Sure.
I'd like you to hang on. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Catherine Davis, and our guest today is Lawrence Edwards. And Lawrence, I wanted to talk more about the actual Awakening Kundalini Path to Freedom. What will this workshop look like and feel like for people?
Well, it's an experientially based workshop, so what we'll be doing is going into the practices that can really help to both calm the mind and ease the body, as well as that can confer the kind of power that can support the awakening of this inner power of consciousness known in the yoga tradition as Kundalini. it's really the conscious awareness. It's the power of consciousness for us to know who we are beyond the mind in all our divine glory, literally. So the workshop is aimed at giving people both a deeper understanding of Kundalini, because though it's become a term that's better known in the West these days, it's often mistaken for, it's just this physiological thing, or it's just related to prana and breath. And so there's a lot of misunderstanding around Kundalini. So also part of the intent of the workshop is to give people a good grounding in understanding the profound nature of Kundalini, the depth and breadth of what this inner power is, and how it can support the flowering of their lives through simple practices to help attune them to that.
Mm-hmm. And would you be able to share with us just a simple practice, maybe lead our listeners through a short meditation so that they can get a sense of what it is that you share in general, or maybe what you'd be sharing?
Sure. For how long? Just give me a sense.
I guess, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good.
Okay.
So one thing that listeners can do, and hopefully they're listening in a place where they can sit quietly and simply be listening so that your attention is free of having to be driving or doing other things, because this is a practice where as you sit quietly, you're first beginning by closing your eyes, getting comfortable, and bringing your awareness simply to feeling the flow of the breath. That breath that is simply coming in and going out, you're allowing your attention to just rest on the breath, not trying to do anything with the breath, but simply to be present with the breath. Almost like following the breath like a feather floats on the breeze. Your mind is just going up and down, feeling the breath coming in and going out. And we invite the breath to slow and deepen some without being forced, and still continuing to simply be aware of that flow of the breath. And as you're feeling that breath, you might also be aware of the gentle weight of your body resting at ease, feeling the steady support beneath you, whether you're sitting or lying down. And all the while, the breath continues coming in and going out. The breath, you know, is like an old friend. Your breath has been with you your whole life. It's carried you through every moment, every experience. And so the mind can take refuge in the breath, come back to the breath, to just rest on the flow of the breath. And that flow of the breath is connected to the flow of life, the flow of the power of life and creativity that sustains every cell in your body, moment by moment. The mind is often so busy with all the things it considers important, it pays no attention to the breath. Yet without the breath, the mind wouldn't exist. So we bring the mind back to that gentle flow of the breath, coming to rest on that, just feeling it, coming in, going out. And as the mind begins to quiet some simply by giving its attention to that flow, we can then also add to the awareness of the breath an ancient mantra. A mantra is a sound form of the infinite. A mantra is literally a throb, a pulsation of consciousness. And this ancient mantra is well known. It's the mantra Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. The mantra means, I bow to or I honor the auspicious one, the divine that's within everybody, everything. Om Namah Shivaya. And now the mind can silently repeat that once on the inhalation, once on the exhalation. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Resting on that inner sound of the mantra, the flow of the breath, and ease and comfort in the body. And moment by moment, the mind can let go of other thoughts and distractions. Simply come back to the breath, back to Om Namah Shivaya, and rest there as long as it would like to replenish itself, to discover what can unfold in the calm and the deep stillness that can settle over it. And so one can continue that practice on one's own. You can use and come back to the mantra Om Namah Shivaya during the day to recollect the mind, to allow it to gather and center again, and integrate that awareness and that experience throughout the day.
That was beautiful.
And one of the unique things about mantra was originally heard in deep meditation. So the ancient mantras were heard by the ancient rishis as they went into these profound states and literally heard the pulsation, the throb. Om is that original sound, and how that then differentiated into these other sounds that make up mantra. And so mantra is seen as a very different language than ordinary language. Ordinary language is mind-born, and the things that our language refers to are things of the ordinary world, whereas mantra comes from beyond the mind. And so it serves as a vehicle, as a way of drawing our attention, our experience, our awareness beyond the mind.
And that's a beautiful thing, because I have had experiences where going into meditation, I have been able to hear tones I didn't associate it with mantra. But there was one experience. I was in the Andes Mountains, high in the Andes Mountains in Ecuador, and there were a lot of pines, and I was very quiet. There was a stream going by, and I actually began to hear, it seemed to me as if the mountains were singing. And it sounded to me a lot like Tibetan bowls, a bit deeper. But it was this very rich sound that I experienced emanating from the mountains. And so it led me to really have that connection that, you know, we really are all part of one world, and we're all, in a sense, one being, and we can connect and communicate through a lot of these practices to a part of reality that we never really learn about. We don't learn about it in school. We don't learn about it in our places of worship. And there's this whole aspect of reality that people are not connected to. And I think that's part of why the world is so stressful, because we're living as half of ourselves, as half beings, rather than living in the fullness of who we are.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of what I write about in my other book, The Soul's Journey, Guidance from the Divine Within. You know, and it has to do with that deeper call, and we have this innate capacity to know. And that's why there's often people feel sort of a disappointment in life or in their existence, like they're intuiting there was something more, more meaningful, more profound that life was supposed to be about than, you know, just consuming or going through an ordinary day. That there's a deeper way that we can bring that connectivity and knowing that's part of what we're capable of, that gives the profound meaning.
I so agree, and I think that this is a real opportunity for people. I think learning about awakening Kundalini is fairly rare. for those of us who have Western minds. So I would love for you to speak for a minute about the work that you do, Lawrence, and how you would recommend people to get in touch with you if they wanted to go deeper or maybe were looking for some kind of private consultations, that kind of thing.
Sure. Well, they can contact me definitely and learn more about what I offer through my website, thesoulsjourney.com. And that has information on books that I've written. There's a Sounds True published Awakening Kundalini, The Path to Radical Freedom, along with a 7.5-hour, 6-CD audio program to support people in learning those practices. And I also offer retreats. I have one coming up at the Garrison Institute right on the Hudson, a beautiful place. And that also will be dealing with Kundalini, but literally looking specifically, the title of that retreat is Living Through Dying. And meditative disciplines, in part, have been aimed at giving us access to the eternal nature of consciousness and to help support us through all the very necessary and excluding unfortunate, though, experiences that we may have of things dying and passing away. And so Living Through Dying is a retreat that focuses on how discovering what's this, the nature of the eternal, the nature of this experience of the divine as our own self, empowers us to move through transitions of things that we need to let go of, things that we may need to die to that have been in our past, so that we can live more fully in the present, in the moment. And so that retreat will focus on that, and people can find out information about that on the Soul's Journey website or the Garrison Institute website and register there. But people contact me via Skype and telephone sessions from literally all over the world to dive into the profound dimensions that open up through energy, through Kundalini, through spiritually transformative experiences, and how to work with them, how to integrate them, how they can show up in dreams and visions. So people can contact me through that website, and my phone number and everything is listed there, and can if they're interested in working with me individually or attending other kinds of group events, welcome to do that.
Excellent. Also, for those of you who would like to go back in and listen to that meditation, you can go to the Progressive Radio Network and look for the Heart of Mind Radio archive page, and you'll be able to listen to the show, download the show, or maybe share it. It'd be a great thing to do. And also on that page for today's show, you'll find the link to Lawrence's website so that you can go directly there and connect. For those of you who didn't have an opportunity to jot all that information down, so I invite you to go to Heart of Mind Radio archive page, and you'll have all the information that you need to proceed. We're just about at the end of our segment today. Lawrence, what would you like to leave people with and maybe encourage them by what they might experience and accomplish through your work, Awakening Kundalini?
The most important thing is that that people can expand their vision to discover who they are beyond any of the limitations that they've inherited by, culture, by birth, by family, that opening to the experience of the divine as our own self brings then the creativity, the energy, the boundless love, the compassion, the extraordinary patience that we are capable of, that we can bring into any time and place. So it's that accessing the thing that makes us most both human and divine is what opens through these kinds of meditative practices, and then brings them into our relationships, our daily work, everything.
Beautiful. And I just want to thank you very much for joining me today. And my guest has been Dr. Lawrence Edwards, and he has a very, very extensive career and has been teaching meditation for over 40 years, a renowned expert on Kundalini, a licensed psychotherapist, and a medical school faculty member. He's the author of Awakening Kundalini, The Path to Radical Freedom. And what was your other book, Lawrence?
Well, one other book is The Soul's Journey, Guidance from the Divine Within. And then I'm a poet. There's a collection of poetry called Kali's Bazaar.
Okay, that sounds great. All right, and thank you, and bye for now, Lawrence.
Thank you so much for your time and attention. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it was my pleasure as well. I just want to take these last few moments to allow all of you to take a breath.